Getting paper on this player, haters, old news, money on the other line. So I'm not. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of I'm Not Gonna Hold You, the off-season, man, the off-season show. We talk to a lot of dope creators in the entertainment, media, and sports space. Also, a little entrepreneur talk, too, man. This is a six-part series, man. So I am very excited for my next guest that I have here today, man. We got the one and only Randy Wilkins, director. He is from the Bronx. In New York City, three-time Emmy Award-winning director. He's done a lot of things, like, you know, he's helmed the ESPN 30 for 30, Spike Lee joint 86-32, which is about the controversial decision between Roy Jones Jr. and Park Sai-hun in the light middle heavyweight gold medal match in 1988 Summer Olympics. Also directed Spike Lee episode of Dear, which is an Apple TV show. And also he's got the new documentary coming out on July 18th on ESPN called The Captain, which is based on my favorite baseball player of all time, Derek Jeter. Randy, man, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, man. First of all, before we get into this, I just want to say, I always like talking about like sports fandom and stuff. I am an ultimate sports fan above all this. Anybody follows me, you know, y'all see me going nuts doing any of my teams play. But you're from the Bronx. So obviously, how you became a Yankee fan. But how did you become a Bulls fan and a Niner fan? That was interesting to me.
All right. So the Yankees is obvious because it's the Bronx.
Yeah.
The Bulls was because like in 87, 88, was like the first time I saw Scottie Pippen.
Okay.
And my sister and I honestly thought he looked funny. So we were like, who's this funny looking dude, like on the Bulls, like, cause you know, we see some of the national games. And then we realized that he was good. So we were basically like kids, like, oh, the funny looking dude is good. We're gonna follow this team. And then we basically like discovered Michael Jordan and it was like, okay, we're definitely Bulls fans.
So, right.
It's weird because in my neighborhood, there were a lot of Pistons fans because everybody loved Isaiah Thomas. So there weren't like a lot of Knicks fans, actually. It was like some Bulls fans, a lot of Pistons fans, a couple Knicks fans. So that really wasn't odd to me because there were so many people that like non-New York teams.
Right.
And then the Niners is because of Jerry Rice and Joe Montana. They're my two favorite football players of all time. The very first NFL game I saw was the comeback against Cincinnati in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
So that was like the very first NFL game I'd ever seen like live, and they won. If the Bengals won, I probably would have been a Bengals guy.
Yeah.
So you know, I was a kid, so Jerry Rice and Joe Montana, and then just went from there. You know what I mean? So I guess I was like on 80s, 90s bandwagons as a kid. But
hey, you're like, still with them though.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I'm not jump ship, like
right.
Stay with the Bulls being terrible. The Niners being a dumpster fire for years, so
yeah,
I'm still with them.
Yeah, with the Bulls too. Of course, you know me being from Chicago, it was all Michael Jordan all day. But I also like Scottie Pippen. You know, you brought up Scottie. Like I like Scottie because I was like, oh, his name is kind of like mine. So that's how I originally when I was a kid. And then you know, I saw the '96 Finals, like the first basketball, really the first sports thing I remember, and it was just all from there, man. So you know, then going on through it. You know, just, you know, that how I became a fan. It's just, you know, things when you're a kid kind of influence you right away. So that was interesting. It's from you bring up the Pistons, too. The thing about, like, Isaiah Thomas, of course, he's from Chicago. My mama loves Isaiah Thomas because they grew up in the same neighborhood. So she – I can't say anything bad about the Bad Boy Pistons. She'll get upset.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Really, I actually met Michael Jordan a couple weeks ago. We interviewed him.
I saw on your Instagram. Yeah.
Man, like, even when I met – I met Derek over Zoom in 2020. So it wasn't in person. So I didn't really have that. Like, I'm not really a Star Trek guy to begin with, but Derek, I didn't because it was over Zoom. But like when I met MJ, we went to his golf course. And like when he walked in the room, like everybody was just like, oh my God, this is
some people just had that presence with him.
Oh yeah. Like yeah. He's just being calm and cool and all that. And we're over here like, oh my God, that's Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
That was definitely like a crazy moment.
Yeah, it's always like the guys who had that presence, like, you know, same thing with being starstruck. I don't get that starstruck either, especially living out here in LA. Like I see celebrities all the damn time. But it's like when this year when I started the Clippers beat and I met Steph Curry when they were playing the Warriors. He said, what up? Y'all like, oh shit, like Steph Curry said that type of shit, like, you know, you get excited about that. But
yeah, man, it's different when you meet them, man. It's different.
Right.
Exactly, especially people you're real fans of, man. But let's talk about, you know, how you got your start in this, man, with directing. Like, well, what originally, like, brought your love for this and, like, was something that you wanted to make as a career? Because you've done a lot of things.
So it happened in college my senior year. Prior to my senior year in college, I dropped, like, 3 arts classes. I had no interest in art, didn't think I had a sensibility for it, had very little interest in it. Like, I watched movies. When I was a kid, my mom would take my sister and I to the movies like every Sunday. So we would watch movies all the time. My mom's like a huge movie buff. Mm-hmm. But I had no interest in the arts. You know, I was playing baseball in college. I had a tryout with the Kansas City Royals, like between my junior and senior year.
Shit. Okay.
And it was like, if baseball doesn't work, I'll probably go to law school and whatever, like do some like regular boring path. Boring, in my opinion. So... because I didn't have an art credit yet. I needed to graduate, but I needed an art credit. That was like the last thing that I needed out of my requirements to graduate. So the only art class that was available was this, video narrative course that was taught by a woman, Mary Haverstick, who was an alum of the school and was like a working filmmaker who still lived in the area. So she taught this course and she opened it up by talking about, Spike Lee and like kind of breaking him down and basically within 5 minutes saying, you know, there's a craft to this. It doesn't just like appear on the screen.
Right.
And for me, I was like, oh, okay. Like, that's cool. Cause to me, it just appeared on the screen. I thought,
right.
And like when this course happened, digital cameras and digital editing really started to become a thing. It was more like accessible to the public, but she would like show clips in this, the first, very first class. And she was like, you know, there's a language. This is part of the language. This is a craft. And within 10 minutes, I got it. You know what I mean? Like naturally, right. I understood exactly what she was talking about. And then when she would show a clip, I knew exactly what it meant and what the director was trying to accomplish. It was weird. It was like I had already known the language, but never knew it. So like fast forward, I finished that course. I blew my knee out. I tore my ACL and I couldn't graduate on time. So I came back for one more year. Or one more semester in the fall of 2001. And obviously 9/11 happened. And being from New York, I didn't want to go back home when I graduated.
Right.
It was like there was too much craziness. And it was like, what am I going to do? So I pitched the school on doing a documentary on a Black-owned barbershop in the white area of town where the school was. And they took the pitch and they were like, yeah, you can do it. And I had no idea what I was doing. I was an English major. So I treated it like an essay. Basically, right. I wrote an outline, but I made it a film. And when I showed that film, it like brought the community and the college together, which like rarely happened. And then that's when I really got the bug. And it was like, okay, I think I actually could do this. Like, I didn't think about it as a career, but it was like, right. I knew I could do it. And I knew I could impact people. And I knew I could say something without actually speaking it. I could use film as a way to say how I felt about things. And then the school hired me as a filmmaker in residence. They just basically made up this position to keep me there and like make more stuff.
Right.
The next year I met Spike and then that changed my life. Like that was basically, it was like, this was destiny. It was divine. Like
right.
I didn't want to be a filmmaker. I didn't know
this happened.
Yeah. When I met Spike, like my whole life changed.
And you bring up Spike. That's one thing I actually want to talk about too. I had the pleasure of meeting Spike one time. Super cool dude. I met him when I was working at Amazon Studios. I think this is like right after the Shy. What was it? It was called the Shy, right? Wasn't it the movie?
Chirac.
That's what it was. I was right with Chirac. I think they did something with Amazon. We were like distributing it, and he was up there, and I got to say what up to him. Told him I was from Chicago, and everything like that. And he was a super cool dude. And you talk about Spike. I love Spike's movies. Do the Right Thing has got to be my favorite one. I all love them. But when you talk about, you know, you meeting with what kind of like, you know, what latched on to him, you know, from you, what he saw in you, like your potential to kind of like, you know, join that, have that relationship that you guys have.
Honestly, I have no idea. Like the first time I met him was at a dinner and we actually got into an argument over Pat Burrell, who used to play for the Phillies.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about film. It wasn't any of that. It was like a sports argument that we had. And I think that told him that like I had different interests, you know what I mean? And I was willing to stand up for myself, but like he kind of in some ways maybe saw himself in me like in that brief moment. And I had given him one of the documentaries that I had done because he was there for a night and then he had to come back. It was like this fellowship that the school gave him.
Okay.
And I guess he saw something in that doc. Because for somebody that like was totally raw, like I said, I have no idea what I was doing. They were pretty good for somebody that didn't know what they were doing, looking back on it. And I think he saw that I had some semblance of talent. And I think that, you know, I was a humble guy. I was his host when he was there. So he got to know me a little bit. I think it's just, he got to know me and he saw a piece of my work knowing that I didn't know what I was doing. And when he was leaving the school, I asked him if he had any advice. And he was like, I have to learn how to make narrative films. And I was so like green. I didn't even know what a narrative film was. Like, right. I didn't even know what he was talking about. But I was like, okay, dope. Like Spike Lee just gave me a fake like narrative films or something.
Yeah.
And then he was like, well, if you want a recommendation to go to NYU grad film school, let me know. And I was like, whoa. You know what I mean? Like that just kind of threw
me. Takes you aback. Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it was just the work, the confidence that I had to give it to him in the first place. But he also got a chance to know me. You know what I mean? And like we had conversations about things that weren't film. I wasn't like trying to pick his brain. I wasn't kissing his ass. I wasn't doing any of that. It was just like another guy who happened to be very famous, but I treated him like anybody else.
Right. You know
what I mean? So I think it was a combination of things where he was comfortable with me in that short amount of time, but I also like demonstrated that I had a little bit of talent.
Yeah, it was all organic. Like you were saying how you guys started off with the sports argument. It's like it wasn't like, hey, man, check out my documentary real quick. You know, it was a different type of thing where like you guys were just talking about something right away and then just letting everything else. And that's kind of like I feel like a lot of good things start.
I almost didn't. Yes, totally. But I almost didn't give him the film.
OK.
No, because I was like nervous. You know what right. I mean? It's Spike. Like, and
right.
You know what I mean? So it's like I know a lot of people have given him stuff. But the whole time I was like, am I even going to give him this film? Like, I made a DVD for him, had a note. I went through the whole thing. But the whole time I was like, man, I don't think I'm going to give it to him. Like, this is crazy. And then something just told me, just give it to him. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, if he doesn't like it, he doesn't like it. Who cares? It's not like I made some career choice at that point.
Right.
So, you know, I took the leap, which I think is something that I've done multiple times over my career. Just, you know, stepped out on faith and confidence and belief, and then I was rewarded for it.
Yeah, that's something you always got to do. Even with me, like, I talk to myself, like, what's the worst they can say? Worst they can say is no. And then, yeah. You know, it doesn't change where I'm at right now any damn way. So exactly. Not like I lose anything, you know? And that's the biggest thing. And I always say, like, even if, like, I fail at something, I would rather shoot the shot and miss it than, like, damn, what if I'd have shot that? What if it went in?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the big thing you got to do right there, man. Now, you did the first episode of the TV show Dear on Apple TV for season 1, and that was on Spike. Was, you know, if you guys already had the relationship, was that different, you know, working with them this time? Like, how was that whole process?
Oh, yeah. I was his editor for a long time, and I was cutting a commercial with them. And when I got the job, he actually like walked in the office like a couple of minutes later. And I was like, you know, you're doing this show Dear, right? They're like, you're like one of the icons or whatever they were calling it. And he was first, he didn't know what I was talking about because he was like in work mode. And then I was like, yeah, you're doing this show, Apple Plus, blah, blah, blah. He was like, oh, yeah. What about it? And I was like, well, I'm the director. He started laughing and then he just walked out. He just left the room. Like he didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. He just like walked out. And then he came back in like a second, like a couple of seconds later, and he just like shook my hand. He was like, congrats. And then he was like, well, you got to do it in LA because this was right before, this is when he was nominated for an Oscar. And he was like, you got to do the interview in LA. We can't do it here. I was like, man, whatever we have to do. So we went to LA. It was a Saturday before he won his Oscar. And he was incredible. I mean, it was weird to be on the other side, but it wasn't because we were basically just like shooting the shit like we always did. It's a little bit more in depth and focused. But he was, that's how I knew. I mean, I knew this already. I mean, I've known him for like close to 20 years. So I already knew how he felt about me and how he supported me and like how I did a lot of stuff with him. But I think that was the day when I really realized that like he had my back. You know what I mean? Because he was really open and vulnerable. And he wanted this to be good, not just for him, but for me. You know what I mean? And right. It was like, there's different ways to support people and like mentor people and look out for them. It doesn't always have to be just some like amazing piece of advice in that moment, but it was like the action. Like he made sure that he was putting me in a position where this was going to be like a dope episode that a lot of people could connect with. Because I know in other interviews, like he's opened up, but that one, he like, we really got
he really opened up. Like yeah. gave me the real.
Yeah. And it was like, he didn't have to do that, but he did. You know what I mean? And it was like, and it's, you can see it on the screen and like how people responded to the episode. And like, you know, it's an emotional episode on a lot of levels, but you know, he made himself vulnerable in that instance. And I think it was because of our relationship. And yeah, I'll always be thankful for that.
That's dope, man. It's always dope when you like have somebody like that who, you know, is in that stature, but like they actually care. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just a different type of situation.
Yeah, and he, you know, a lot of people have opinions of him, but like at his core, he like loves people, he loves Black people, he loves to support people. You know, he's an icon, so like there's a lot of things pulling at him. So it's not always right. for him to do it when you want him to do it or when you hope he can do it. But like his spirit is there. You know what I mean? He's like a real good dude and cares and wants to right. and like backs it up. So
definitely, man. Let's talk about the captain, man. Your newest project, man, on the captain, Derek Jeter. If you guys been living under a rock, you haven't seen the great trailers and stuff that's been on TV. It drops July 18th. So check that out. Now you're a massive Yankee fan, man. Now, was this like a different feel because you are such a Yankee fan? I know if I had to do something on like the Bears franchise or something, it would be like a different thing for me. That's my favorite team. Like, to just tell me like what, you know, how the project came about. Now, originally Spike was set to direct it, correct?
Yes and no. Like, okay. From what I know, Derek like years ago had said if he was ever going to do something like this, he was going to ask Spike. To do it.
Okay.
They're friends.
Gotcha.
And it was happening, and he approached Spike, and Spike said he couldn't do it because he had another project going on. But he said that, you know, I have just the guy. Like, I have a guy. And it was me.
Yeah. Set you up with the lob.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was like, I have a guy, and you need to meet him. And he's a huge Yankees fan. He knows your career. Like, basically, Derek's career started when I was in high school all the way through. And he was like, he's the guy. So first I met Mike Tolan, who was the producer of The Last Dance. Spoke with Mike, went through that. And then I met Derek, and it was a Zoom. As I mentioned before, it was Derek, Spike, and I. And it was June of 2020. And like.
So like right after The Last Dance aired.
Yeah. So like as soon as Derek popped on and we started and we were introduced, it was as if I had known him for 10 years. It was very odd. It was very odd to me. Like we just hit the ground running. Like there was no like nervousness or like awkwardness. It was just like we had known each other already. And then I got the call like maybe like a week or two later that Derek wanted me to do it. And it went from there. But like as a fan, like, this is the thing, and I know, like, when it comes out, there'll be some people that, like, mention that I'm a Yankees fan and, like, I don't hide from it or run from it.
Yeah, you know people are going to come up with that.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, ever since this was announced, people, like Rays fans last year when the Yankees were struggling, they were talking shit about it.
Well, you work for Jeter. What do you know what you're talking about?
Like, it was, like, all of that stuff, and you know, it's going to be a love letter and a puff piece and all this shit. But the thing is, and the thing I always said was I'm a – filmmaker and storyteller first. Like, right. This is my job to tell a story. And whatever is entailed in that story, it's my responsibility to do it well and do it balanced. So, like, my fandom helped because I knew the subject really well. But it's not, like, tainted for a Yankees fan or, right. like, the scales are tipped. The point of it is it's a film. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like any other documentary on any other prominent person or person that you don't know. You have a responsibility to tell a story the best way and honest way possible. So right. like for me, I'm trying to tell it for White Sox fans. I'm trying to tell it for Dodgers fans. I'm trying to tell it for Mets fans or like people that don't even like baseball but know who Derek Jeter is.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not like there's not like some weird sports thing. It's a film. You know what I mean? And right. It's not to have my bias involved. And also, like, there are things that Derek talks about. There are moments in his career, like all those things that we get into, and it has to be portrayed honestly. You know what I mean? Like, my fandom can't have anything to do with it because then
right. It
defeats the whole purpose of having a film. So the fandom helped in terms of, like, convincing Derek I could tell this story, but also it armed me in terms of just, like, research and, like, knowing the experiences and knowing the moments and, like, the nuances of some of the stories. So when I spoke to people, they gave me the information that I needed to tell a well-rounded story. Like, one thing I appreciate, Michael Kay, who's the Yankees play-by-play guy for the
My favorite play-by-play guy. I love his see ya. That's my favorite home run call.
And he's from the Bronx. So, like, he shouted me out a couple times on, like, Yankees broadcast, and the one thing he kept saying was how well-prepared we were and, like, how the interview was, like, 3 or 4 hours with them. But, like, we knew what we were talking about, and that's where the fandom comes in. You know what I mean? So it's not, like, in the story, because the story is meant to be for everybody. It's not just supposed to be for Yankees fans. It's supposed to be for everybody.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm sure people will say something. I'm wearing a Yankees hat, like, blah, blah, blah.
Everybody, they'll find something. Oh, that's one thing I know. People find something to complain about. Like, I even since I started covering the Bears, somebody's like, well, you're not as negative about – you're more negative about them now. Like, I'm like, dude, like, they don't pay me.
I mean, like, your goal as a filmmaker is to tell an honest story.
Yeah.
Now, you have your perspective on it, obviously, but that perspective can't be totally influenced by your fandom. Right. Like, that's not how this works.
And, like, you said how you want to make it for all fans. Like, me, of course, I'm a diehard White Sox fan. Like, the first, like, Frank Thomas gave me an autograph of glove when I was like 97, so I became like a White Sox fan from them. They won the World Series on my 17th birthday. I'm a diehard White Sox fan, but Derek Jeter is my guy. Like, I've been a Jeter fan for as long as I can remember. I say Jeter, Frank Thomas, and Griffey are the reason I love baseball as much as I do. Mm-hmm. And you know, these new documentaries that are coming out, it's cool to me because these are like on the era of sports that, like, as I was a kid or I was a teenager, I remember vividly, you know, with Last Dance or Tom Brady is with one he's got now. That's why I was so excited when the announcement came out. And what do you want people to, like, know about Jeter? Because he's a household figure. Like, even if you don't watch baseball, you know who the hell Derek Jeter is. Right. And what do you want people to get out of this that, you know, they might have not necessarily known about him going into it?
I mean, that he's just a dynamic cultural icon. You know what I mean? Like, he transcended the sport, and that, you know, just to let people know who the man is behind their jersey, like, who is the man behind number two? You know what I mean? So it's like, there isn't a specific thing that I want people to walk away thinking about him, because that's not really my job. Like, it's just it, and everybody take it how they want to. But the intent was to show the man behind the jersey. And I know, like, even when it came out, a lot of people were hesitant and, like, you know, what is this, like, 6-7 hour thing on a guy that never talks and he doesn't know, you know, he doesn't have a personality and he's boring and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, man, that was all by design.
Right.
I mean, that's not who he is. He's not like that. But he was driven by winning, and he knew that, like, if he made stories, he couldn't win because he was in New York. So the intent of it, my hope, is that people walk away knowing who he is and feeling as if, like, they could go to lunch or wherever and be like, and feel like they were a Derek Jeter expert now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, like, there's definitely things where the Yankees, that dynasty team and the teams after the dynasty are discussed and they're part of the narrative and all that stuff. But there's a lot of personal stuff that Derek reveals and, like, stuff about his real personality, like, personal moments that a lot of people don't know about, and definitely some that, like, people don't know about at all, like his relationship with A-Rod, like, we touch on that and other things. So that the intent is to make sure that people walk away feeling like they have a better idea of who the man is, not necessarily the player.
Right. Now, you brought up Michael Jordan. Now, what was like some – you interviewed tons of people for this, you know, hours on hours and hours. Besides Jordan, who was like a favorite person that you got to interview during this whole process?
Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson was like towards the top of the list. He felt like my old head uncle that was just like just telling me about being black in America. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So Reggie Jackson, CC Sabathia, Dave Winfield, Brian Cashman, a lot of the journalists like Joel Sherman, David Cohn was amazing. Like David Cohn was definitely one of my favorite ones. Don Mattingly, I met Don Mattingly, which was like for a Yankee fan.
It's awesome.
That's like meeting Derek.
Yeah.
For a certain generation of like Yankees fan. Theo Epstein was great. We had Theo Epstein and Jimmy Rollins. Jimmy Rollins was like incredible. Like he's like besides
Jimmy Rollins, one of my favorites, man.
Yeah, man. Like he's straight Oakland. So it was like it, you just feel it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny because we filmed this interview out in LA and our production manager, Jonathan Hall, always got us like great lunch. Like he always found like some dope spot to get lunch from. Mm. He had gotten like barbecue or something that day. And for like an hour, Jimmy Rollins just hanging out with us in this house that we rented to shoot, just eating ribs, like talking.
Just you know chilling.
What I mean? Yeah. Like, nowhere to go or nothing like that. He was waiting to pick up his daughter. I guess he was like killing time. He had to get her from school or whatever. And yeah, he was just like shooting the shit with us. Like he wasn't just like this amazing baseball player that won a World Series and like an MVP. Yeah. Eating ribs with us, you know what I mean?
I think a lot of those Oakland cats are like that. Gary Payton's like that too. Gary Payton's a real, real cool dude.
Yeah, nah, it was. We were blessed, man. We had like we did like 90 interviews, and there's a lot of great people that shared their time. Gary Sheffield, of course, the core four. I'm just like very thankful that people gave a lot of their time to talk to us to make this project great, and it like showed how much love Derek has from a lot of people. But yeah, that was just like some of the people that immediately off the top of my head, like really stood out. Willie Randolph, Howard Reynolds, Susan Waldman. Waldman. That's like my homie now. Susan Waldman, that was one that like, again, if you're a Yankees fan, that's like a holy grail conversation.
Right.
I mean, like she means so much to Yankees fans and women in sports. So to speak with her was like an honor.
Now, you know, when you work on these projects, you know, there's a lot of work going to. I know, like, whenever I release something, like, I know I don't either want to watch it because it's like I've watched it so many times while editing or making it, things like that. Is there like a sense of relief that after all this time that the project is finally coming out that you can kind of like just take a deep breath, or that would be after people watch it?
It'll probably be after people watch it because you're like super in tune to how people are reacting to it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel very confident that people are really going to enjoy it and they're going to love it. And it's going to be considered one of those films that like, you know, oh, well, the captain did this or, you know, they said this in the captain and like kind of becomes like this larger like cultural piece. Like I feel
iconic sports documentary type thing.
Yeah. I mean, I feel confident. We'll see if that happens, but I feel good about what we did. But like once that happens, then I could take a deep breath. I will say that it would be nice to like not have to like watch it and give notes or like get
right.
like yeah. 10 million conversations with like 10 million people. You know, that stuff would be cool. So when it airs, I could just like take a deep breath. I don't have to edit anything anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, like it's done. But I'm very curious to see how people respond to it, especially like non-Yankees fans. Like Yankees fans are going to love it. Like
yeah.
They're going to be all up in it. But for me, it's like non-Yankees fans or people that want to learn more about Derek and they're giving it a chance and like keeping those people around.
Definitely, man. One last thing before we get out here. Let's talk about quickly the 2022 Yankees. Y'all are having – it's got to be fun to be a Yankee fan right now. The complete opposite of what I wanted my baseball team to play like this year. I want to jump in the traffic every time I watch the White Sox.
That's all last year.
Yeah, right, exactly. You guys were up and down last year too. So it's like – what has been exciting about this? Obviously, besides the winning, you know, Aaron Judge is to me is the AL MVP right now, like hands down. What has been fun to you about this year? And is it one of those things where it's like you know, you can enjoy it, but I still want to see what they do in the playoffs because I have a friend from New York. He's like a diehard Yankee fan. He's like, man, we killing, but I want to see what October's like.
I mean, yeah, of course. So you always want to think about October, but I mean, if they keep playing the way they're going to play, nobody can beat them in four games. You know what I mean? It would have to be like fluky baseball stuff in the playoffs. Right. That's how I felt in 98. Like when you have a run like that, it really is just as long as something fluky doesn't happen and you're healthy, you can beat the odds of like of how baseball normally works. It was like with the 18 Red Sox, the 98 Yankees. They're just like some teams that as long as like something crazy doesn't happen,
they'll be good. Yeah.
But it's just like the way that they compete and believe in each other and like how they're having fun. Like last year they didn't have fun and it was like terrible to watch them play. It was like it was taking years off of your life just because they would compete sometimes and like they didn't have like energy level and you could tell the chemistry was off.
I 100% know what you're talking about.
Yeah. That's what's happening with the White Sox.
Right.
Then you have injuries and then COVID and like all that stuff. But like this year, they compete like literally to the last pitch. Like even what happened last night against the Astros.
Yeah.
It's like once they got the first two guys on,
you knew they were going to win.
Yeah. And you already know it.
Especially when Aaron Hicks hit a home run of all people. Yeah, exactly. They got this game in the bag.
He took that the first fastball down the middle. And I'm like, bro, that's the one pitch you have to like really do damage and you let it go. And then it happened.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's how you know that things are breaking your way. And it's just like watching them compete. They just like compete ferociously. And it's crazy too, because like I talked to Derek in the 98 team about that season. Yeah. And they were all like, our attitude was the game was over as soon as we got off the bus. It was like, we're here.
Just that
game
swagger they had.
Yeah. Right. And it was like, the game's over already because we showed up. Not because like we're playing, but like the game was over before it started and we were going to beat you down and then we're going to leave. And like now it feels like this team feels the same way. You know what I mean? That it's like, okay, you might get ahead or whatever, but we know we're going to come back. Like we know either the bullpen's going to hold us down, the lineup's going to do something, the start. It's just like everything.
It's like these little moments that you know, like that, okay, this is a special season. I think I only felt that once with my baseball team. That was 05. And I'll never forget, you know, when we played Boston. And I was so worried the Boston was going to come back. That's when it was a year after they came back against the Yankees. And I was like, they had bases loaded, you know, no outs, and El Duque got out of it. I was like, okay, this might be our type of year.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. Like, they're just, like, for example, when this airs, people probably won't know exactly what game we're talking about. But, like, so the NBA draft was last night.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking it's like 3-3 with the Yankees and the Astros. The Astros, Yordan Alvarez has a 3-run home run. They're down 6-3. It's like the second or third inning. The draft starts. So I'm like, all right, I'm not going to watch the Yankees game because they're going to come back. I just don't
know. Just don't know
when. Watch the draft, right? I'm not going to go through this, like, this boring game now or whatever and, like, get frustrated and mad, right? So I watch the draft thinking there's going to be all these trades. Nothing happens. It's boring. But I stay with it to see what the Bulls pick is. So then it's, like, the ninth inning. It's the bottom of the ninth in the Yankees game. So I was like, all right, I'm going to turn it back. Because they're going to come back.
Right.
As soon as, like, I saw Ryan Pressly, the closer from the Astros, and, like, he gets thrown two balls.
We got him.
I was like, oh, they're going to win. You know what I mean? Yeah. Hicks didn't even hit the home run yet. But you could just tell that
the energy was shifting.
Yeah, and, like, you're playing in New York, and, like, New York's – that crowd is back because they believe in the team. So it's, like, there's – I know those people say Boston or like a couple other places. There's no more intimidating place to play baseball than like an amped up Yankee Stadium.
Yankee Stadium, oh, by far.
Yeah, because we're disrespectful.
Yeah.
Like we have energy. The energy level doesn't drop. Nobody leaves when they're down, which is what happened last night. Like that's the thing too. Like nobody leaves the park. Like they're going to stay to the very end. So everybody was there. So if it was like 40,000 people at the beginning, it was 40,000 people at the end.
You hear that, Cubs and Sox fans? Y'all like leaving early.
Oh, yeah. No, that was it. And that was what people said last night. It was like the energy never changed because nobody left the stadium.
Yeah.
And when they came back, it was like a playoff game. You know what I mean? So it's like They just have it. I don't really know how to else to describe it, but hopefully that keeps up as long as they're healthy.
Yeah. Health is a big key. Yeah. Well, it when my White Sox are winning, because even if they made the playoffs, they're going to be home before week 5. I would like to see Yankees Dodgers in the World Series so I can at least try to go to one of them games at Dodger Stadium. MLB would love that. MLB would love nothing more than the top two markets being the World Series.
I know, like, Yankees fans have been asking for that for a couple of years. And I'm sure Dodgers fans do too, you know, like with the history of the franchises in New York and East Coast, West Coast, and they're great. And the Yankees are pretty good, so that'd be dope. As long as the Yankees are there.
Right. I truly didn't know how big the Dodger fan base was till I moved here. Like, a lot of people think it's, like, overwhelmingly Lakers. I think it's neck and neck. Dodgers might be an inch over the Lakers out here.
Well, it's crazy. The Dodgers played the Yankees in 2016 when the Yankees had just, like, traded everybody and, like, got rid of A-Rod. And, like, it was basically Dodgers. It was Chavez Ravine East.
Yeah.
Like, the big flags. I was just like, what the hell is going on here? Like, more than Red Sox fans. It was crazy. I was just like, wow, this base is, like, real. This is crazy.
Yeah, so, man. Yeah. Definitely. Well, thank you.
I need the Yankees to beat in the playoffs, so I need them to go through the Astros.
And yeah, y'all been wanting the Astros for a while. Y'all got to get that give back.
Give back, please. Yeah. Just give us the Astros, please.
Definitely, man. Thank you for joining me, bro. So it drops July 18th. By the time y'all watch this, that'll be on Monday. We're going to drop this on a weekend before the documentary comes out. So July 18th on ESPN. Now, is it a weekly drop thing like Last Dance, or is it all at one time?
No, it'll be weekly. So
okay.
First episode will air July 18th after the Home Run Derby, so like right after. And then that Thursday, it'll start the first two episodes and then every Thursday for the next couple of weeks.
Okay, cool, man. Definitely, man. I'm definitely looking forward to watch this. I can't wait. As a big Jeter fan as I am, I'm definitely looking forward to this, man. Thank you for making out some time. Let people know where they can get in tune with you on Twitter and Instagram, everything you got going on.
Twitter is Pam Sun, PAMSSON, and Instagram is Ravishing Randy Rude. Shout out to, and rest in peace to Ravishing Rick Rude, the legend.
RIP. Yeah, definitely.
And thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Once again, this is another episode of I'm Not Gonna Hold You, the offseason. You know to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Barbershed Scott. Follow the Barbershed Network at BarbershedNet. And follow H&B Media at H&B Media TV on Twitter. We'll holler at y'all next week, man. Triple double hat trick, I know the code too.